Hey Ray Fam, thank you for being part of our incredible community. Your support has made the Reg C Show a hub for amazing stories, thought-provoking conversations, and unforgettable moments. We've embarked on a mission to bring you the most extraordinary guests, individuals with unique perspectives and stories that inspire. And here's where you come in. We're aiming to take our podcast to new heights and we want you to be a part of that journey. Imagine this. By subscribing to The Reg Z Show, you're not just staying updated on the latest episodes, you're actively contributing to the growth of our community and helping us attract even more amazing guests onto the show. So, if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button right now. It's a small action with a huge impact. Subscribing not only shows your support for the podcast, but it also sends a powerful message to potential guests that our community is passionate, engaged, and hungry for the kind of content that sparks curiosity and fuels inspiration. And if you have already subscribed, fantastic! Share the love by telling your friends, family, and colleagues about The Reg C Show. Together, we can build a community that celebrates diverse voices and extraordinary stories. Well, thank you for being a part of this journey. Your support means the world to us. So hit that subscribe button, join our growing community, and let's continue unlocking extraordinary stories together on The Reg C Show. As we all know, running a non-profit or charitable organization is a fulfilling way to give back to society. However, there are things to think about. Running a charity of any size can be a responsibility, and the Charity Commission expects charities to be run well. If you want to set up your own charitable foundation, or if you are a donor and you are curious about where your money goes after your donation, then this episode is for you. Hi, my name is Rayson, and I'm the host of The Reg C Show, and in this episode, we've invited an inspiring philanthropist. His name is none other than Chase Hammer. Chase transformed a modest $5,000 into a staggering $40 million per year fintech enterprise. After selling his company for over $500 million, he founded an innovative charitable giving company called Wishes Inc. that leverages his fintech experience to create transparency and efficiency when donating. Well, without further ado, let's welcome Chase into the podcast. Woohoo! Hey, 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 Chase.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Looking forward to this conversation.
You. Oh, yeah, man. I mean, I'm really excited to actually chat with you. And, you know, after getting the information from Guest EO, a little shout out to them. I was like pretty intrigued by what you've been doing as well. Something that I do not have before in the podcast itself, because I'm a big believer in charity work, but I've not really asked or even invited someone to actually speak about this kind of topic. So, man, I'm really honored to have you here. And how have you been, man?
I'm good. You know, we're just grinding, trying to make it all happen. And, you know, just excited to launch it this month. It's been a lot of work. And, yeah. Transforming charitable giving is not an easy task.
Yeah, I agree, man. I mean, like, you know, charity is a big thing for many countries as well. Every country needs it and wants it, especially third world countries, developing countries as well. But of course, you know, when it comes to all this nitsy bitsy stuff on the rules and regulations and things like that, which we're going to talk a little bit about it later on as well. But, you know, before we actually go to that extent, I would like to actually ask you, Chase, can you share with the audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So my name is Chase Harmer, but I've been in payments for, you know, dang near 30 years, pretty much my whole adult life. I started building, you know, on the acquiring side, which essentially, you know, helping merchants accept transactions. I built a big company doing that. That's where we were, you know, doing about $40 million a year. But I realized that, you know, we need to start building technology, building value into the ecosystem to be able to make more money, but help clients do more things. So we started building technology in 2014. That's really where I became fascinated with the idea of the whole economy of the transaction. And when I say the whole economy of a transaction, like consumers buying something, but when it's bought from a business, that business has a supplier, right? That whole supply chain of that transaction. So, utilizing virtual cards to accept transactions from a merchant that's taking credit cards, but then creating a virtual card and paying that supplier in two transactions, but making it the whole economy of that transaction. I became fascinated with that idea of being able to do that, but making arbitrage on both sides of the transaction, but making it super efficient, making it super seamless. And I had been doing that for, since 2014. And when I got out of that, my last company, I was starting to donate to companies more often. And I was like, I never knew where the money was going, never understood what was happening to the cash that I gave. And every grocery store was asking me for a dollar. And I was wondering, like, where'd that dollar go? Like, it was to help the kids. Like, what kids are they actually helping? And and then they're getting that big, huge tax credit later. And I thought, well, I can solve this problem, and I can solve this problem pretty easily. I had been solving the whole economy of transaction, the business transaction, for, 9 years. And I was like, well, what's the difference between solving that and solving this, right? Because if you think about the credit, they're taking a credit, we're giving with a credit card, and then they're spending it on stuff, like goods and services to help the people, the cause, the crisis. And I was like, well, what's the difference? There is no difference, right? And so I basically solved the problem utilizing the same problems that I was solving for the business world. And we made it super easy, super seamless, and, made it all digital. And I think that's the way that we're not changing user behavior. We're all used to using credit cards on a phone or a tablet, and that's really how we're doing it. Credit cards in, credit cards out, and nobody knows the difference. At the end of the day, the donor always knows what happens to that transaction. And really what we're doing is really solving a problem utilizing the same technology that I've been using for 9 years in the business world. I feel like, there really is no difference. It was a super simple problem for me to solve, and that's what I did.
Okay. Oh, interesting. And remembered your fintech company. What was it, similar as PayPal?
It was like a Stripe.
That was like a Stripe.
Yeah, more like we're on the merchant side. PayPal is more on the consumer side. They accept transactions with PayPal, so anybody could have a wallet, take transactions. That's more of a PayPal thing. We were more of a Stripe thing.
I see. Okay. So what made you want to leave that company and focusing on changing the landscape of charitable donations in a sense?
Yeah. Well, I had a huge car accident that happened to me in 2021. And after that, I stepped away from the business I love that business. So it wasn't something that I wanted to do, but I think that I had to do it. And I took some time for myself. And then after that, after sitting on your butt for a little while, you just want to do something else. And that's the direction that I went into. I think, I'm just one of those guys that I always got to be doing something. So I can't be doing nothing.
Right. Okay. I understand.
Yeah. That's basically the simple facts.
So that means, you had this terrible accident in 2021, and then after that you had that epiphany that you wanted to do something for people who are in this donation charity department, in a sense where in this industry you felt that, hey, they are not as transparent as they were or they are, so you thought of doing something that is
I think what I felt like is that, charitable giving, the reason why you give is because you're emotionally connected to a story, right? You think about Maui, like Maui, if someone's like, man, that sucks. like, I want to help that family. I want to help them, right? Because you're emotionally connected to the story, right? And people give to people. And if you don't ever know what happens to the money after you give it, like, then why are you giving, right? You don't even know what's going on with the money after. Like, we give because we want to be connected, because that's part of being human. Being human is that connection. Like, we want that connection. We want to help them. We want to understand. But if you never understand, like, then what is it that you're doing? There is no connection in charitable giving anymore. It's just, it doesn't exist. You either have time or you have money. If you have time, then you go volunteer and you're there. You can actually make a difference, right, in that moment. But if you have money, or, you know, you're trying to do something with money, like Maui fires, you can't actually go there, but you can actually send them money. Or this is an example. There's many examples that you can do that with. But but if you're trying to do that and you never actually know what happens to the money, then where's the connection? What I'm bringing back, the connection in charitable giving, you know? And I think that's really what we're doing is, you know, we want to be connected. We want to be plugged in. And yeah, I mean, there's lots of great things that we're doing outside of being connected. Is you get rewards, you get tax deductions, you get to always understand what happens to the money. So there's lots of benefits. But I think mainly, like, what I'm trying to do is that I want to understand, like, did I help that person? Can I help that person? Like, you don't actually know what happens to anybody. And when you donate to, like, a Red Cross, it goes into a pot, right? That pot might not be used for that particular thing, right? Yeah. Because, like, they got tons of money in there. So they're stewing up this pot, and they could, it's basically wherever they want to send that money. Like, when you put money into that pot, you might want to help the Maui fires. You want to help this thing. The money's not actually going there. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Like, are you actually helping in that moment? The answer is no, you know? And I think, you know, we're trying to be connected, you know, that's not, you're not being connected by doing that. You're actually not. So you're just bringing it to a pot that they're going to use for something down the line.
True, true. They might be using for other causes, or they might be using for the salaries or the renovations. Of their company or whatsoever thing.
You should have the choice as a donor. You should have that choice, honor, to always understand what happens to that money. Where does your $20 go? Where does your $50 go? Nobody knows. It's impossible. The nonprofit can't even tell you.
True, true. I understand. Or maybe they had some failed investments and they are using your money to replace
certain money. They can't tell you where your money goes.
They can't tell you that. They can't tell you that. Right. Yeah,
they're a big charity with a big pot of money. It goes in there. They can't tell you where exactly your dollars in, dollars out go.
Correct.
Yeah.
The only people that they can tell, in a sense, open inverted comma, is to the government, because they have to charge their taxes and
They actually can't. They show where this pile of money goes, not where your $20 goes. They can't show where your $20 go. It's impossible. Yep.
Okay.
They show where this pile of money goes, and they can show where this pile of money goes 12 to 18 months later. They can't do it in real time.
Yep. True.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can only, like, you know, in a website telling you, this money is actually for this cause, but not exactly.
But it is from a nonprofit level, right? When you're a nonprofit, like, we're also helping them raise money, because when you're a nonprofit and you can go back. So today, the conversation to go back to a donor is, hey, I need money for this cause. And then a week or two later or a month later, there's like, hey, I need money for this other cause, right? Now, now you take a step back and you're using wishes, and you can say on the second conversation, hey, thank you for what you did on this last, impact. Like, this is the impact that you made. Thank you for participating. By the way, we'd love to have you participate in this next fundraiser. You know, that's a much different conversation than, hey, I need money. I can't show you what happened to it last time. I mean, that's a way easier conversation to have.
Yep. Which we're going to talk a lot more about this later on as well, because I actually am curious about this as well. sidetracked from the charity, but more on your journey as well. I'm just curious, like, well, while you're actually building your business up, while you're building all this, I'm pretty sure you would have successes and failures as well. And speaking of which, Chase, do you have a favorite failure of yours? And how has a failure or apparent failure set you up for later success?
Man, you know, I think, you know, when you're building something, you try to innovate something new, the amount of failures that you have is just a lot. You know, and it's a humbling experience. You know, when you go from winning so much to failing so much, there are so many failures. But I feel like one that sticks out of my head is we did this big push for a new project that we were running. When I say project, it was like we had this product and we were going to go to market. We were going to market and we did this ad, we shot this video, and it was like, boom, like when we did it, just huge response, massive response. And we were just get flooded with tons of new leads that came through. And we weren't necessarily ready for the amount of traffic that we were going to get from that. And I feel like when you finally win, but you're losing at the same time, mm-hmm. that sucks. You know, that hurt. And it's not my favorite, but it's definitely the one that comes to mind. Because like, it's like you have a win and you're happy, but like you at the same time, you're like, holy shit, like this sucks, because you really are burning capital. You know, you're just burning money because you have so many opportunities that are coming in, but you can't actually help it all because you didn't have the process built. And I think the lesson there is to build process. And it's funny because I was on another podcast today and they focus on specifically process. And you know, not having a process in place is a big deal. And I've said this so many times, like over and over, like a million different podcasts and just talking to people, is, you know, process really is everything. You know, it really is. Like, you know, it's the last thing most entrepreneurs think about because we're so busy, like focused on the product and like what needs to happen here. And like, oh my God, but the process to board them, you know, like the little things that, you know, you're not necessarily thinking about. What happens after you get the business? You know, what happens mm-hmm. when you succeed and you get the business? Because you're thinking about like, how do we get the business? What do we have to do to get it all? Like, we have to have this here, we have to do this here, we have to do this here. But let's say that you're right, because usually I'm right. You know, let's say that you're right. Like, what then? Like, you know, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs, we don't necessarily think that far. We're thinking about, okay, how do we pull it in? What do we got to do here? And like all the things about the actual product itself, you know, we're so focused on the product. It's got to be perfect. And yep. you get it perfect. But what happens if you're right? You know, what if they respond and you're right? Like, oh shit, what now? You know, and I think a lot of guys, they don't think that far. You know, they're just thinking about the product itself. And when you build something from scratch, it's hard not to think about the product itself, because you're worried about the product not doing what it needs to do, instead of what if you're right and it does everything that you needed to do, and you don't actually think about how to act, like how to facilitate that client afterwards.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's a natural founder thing to worry about, and lessons to be learned.
I understand. So because of not having a proper process, which caused you not just the money but also at the same time opportunities as well, I believe, and the clients leaving you after that, in a way or rather, am I right to say
it wasn't from the product itself, it was really the ability not to support them, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I see. Was this recent? Like
No. This was back in the day. Yeah. This is not recent. This is back in the day. But these are just lessons you learn, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, I think now is you have to get the product right, definitely, right? Right. But then after that, customer success is everything, you know, it's mm-hmm. everything, you know, just like process is everything. Customer success really is everything, you know. How do you keep them on board? How do you keep them engaged? How do you keep them doing things? How do you keep them making money for you? How do you keep them happy? That's everything, you know, it really is. Customer mm-hmm. success is the business. That's the business.
Right.
It's not you in the front end, like trying to make it look pretty. It's customer success. That's their job and that's what they need to do. But that is the business long term. How do you keep them on? How do you keep them engaged? How do you keep them doing, getting them to do more?
Right. I agree. Yeah, it's always a both ways kind of thing. It's not just your product.
But well, your product's got to be right. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
You know, right. I think there's a variety of things. I mean, you have to do them all well. That's the thing about being a founder is you have to do them all well. Cool. You know, if you don't do them all well, you're fucked. You know,
I agree.
Product's perfect, then the customer success fails. Late, like that customer's gone, right? You know, the customer success is amazing. Your product sucks. You're fucked. Like, you know, you're fucked a million different ways to Sunday. So, mm-hmm. you know. These are things you really don't learn until you get fucked. You know, you have to get fucked in order for you to learn. That's just the reality is that one day you will get fucked. If you haven't been fucked yet, don't worry. It's coming.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Don't edit your first shot. You know, Airbnb wasn't like perfect right from the start, you know, but they just kept figuring it out. And then one day they had it right. And, you know, that's really just the reality of having, you know, if you're innovating or building something is that, you know, the reality is it's not perfect day one. But when you have a second fintech, you really know like how to do it right. Really know like how to not fuck yourself. And so, you know, you have a way better shot of getting it right the first time and what to look for and what to do, what to not do. And so, yeah, that's the key. Those are the keys. But you really don't learn that until you learn that. And most of the part of learning that is getting fucked.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You had to get fucked sideways one time.
Yeah. Ironically, as it sounds, you have to go through such ordeal, such a process before you actually understand, this is how business works in a sense.
It's a wild west. No one's going to show you how to do it. You got to get fucked once and then you know how to do it. And then that's the hard truth about it. You know, the reality is most founders, like 95% of them all fail. You know, they all it's a doggy dog world out there. No one's going to show you how to do it because the real founders are in the game, are in the dirt. They're whacking weeds and they're trying to make it happen, you know, and the fake founders, like they're on podcasts trying to talk about what they're doing. And the reality is, they ain't doing shit.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. They're just talking and building, hyping it up, making themselves more famous. And then next moment, investors lost their money because this person just ran away with the money. Oh, this guy like SBF or you know, all this other big... All those crypto and whatsoever not, and what happened next? Oh shit! It's a failed endeavor for them.
Most of the crypto guys are the worst. They're dirty, but you know.
Yeah, I know. Oh damn. And just wondering, then back then, how did you actually stay motivated despite facing those failures, challenges, and all?
You know, it was tough back then. It was tough. Like, I mean, I gotta say, like, it was some of the toughest days because, you know, some days I was just like, man, like, you know, right when you wake up, there's a fire, you know, like you, right. You know, you're a fireman most of the time. You're just putting out fires all day long, you know, and, you know, most of the time you really don't know how to solve them because you are new, you know, engineering is new. A lot of the times, new founders will be like, oh, well, I don't need to learn engineering because, you know, I have engineers. Well, the rough reality is you need to know enough to understand if you're getting fucked. Because most of the time, if you don't know enough, like you are getting fucked a bit. And an engineers know when you don't know. You know what I mean? They know when you don't know for sure. And, you know, you know, it could be pretty bad if you don't know. And they, well, if they know that you don't know, you know, they'll just take you for a ride. So, you know, there are going to be days and when you need to show up like the boss and, you know, you need to understand that, you know, but you can't go too far because then you'll scare them all away, you know, because they're like aliens, you know, they're a different breed of people. You know, and they'll run like little scared Bambis if you treat them like, you know, too rough.
Yeah. So, yeah, I agree, man.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, if you are in the business of, say, for example, crypto, and you don't understand a shit about crypto, and you have all these engineers, coders, and whatsoever not helping you. And they might want to fuck you up, and then you're like, oh shit! I thought this is the right stuff to do, or whatsoever. But they're just,
well, first of all, most engineers can't fuck me up. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I get it.
You know, like I'll kick their teeth in. But you know, I think what you need to do is you really need to understand that you know,
right.
And what I mean by that is, you can have a conversation with them, like, and it's they understand that you understand what they're talking about. You know, right. You might not know how to code, but you know enough to be dangerous, and that's enough to actually be a leader in the organization. And you know, not necessarily the go between you know, you and the person that doesn't know, but certainly. You need to know enough to be dangerous in order to lead an organization in the tech world. You just have to. And I think there's a lot of visionaries out there that think that they don't need to know how to do that. And they're just going to be this vision guy. And I think that's a big part of the problem is, and that's why a lot of these guys fail, is they don't speak the language. And engineers know they don't speak the language. So nothing really gets done the way you need it to be.
Right. I agree. And you have been building business and doing a lot of things for quite some time already. And I'm pretty sure along the way you would have met some mentors along the way. So can you share with us, like, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received from them?
Well, you know, I had a mentor for 2 years who is one of the smartest guys in the world. His name is Walter O'Brien.
Walter O'Brien.
Yeah, you can look him up. Fourth highest IQ in the world. And you know, I didn't really give him the credit that he was due during that time, but there's a lot of things that he said to me that resonate pretty well. And super smart dude. And a lot of what he said were things that I took to the heart later. And a lot of the stuff that he said at the time, I wasn't able to absorb because I was so caught up in the moment. And I thought, like, I didn't really have time to slow down. I mean, go slow to go fast is one of those things that really resonates with me, because a lot of time, think about, like, when you're new, you build up an empire. And this empire is built on sticks, you know, and but you have a million lines of code just built on sticks. And, you know, it's better to rebuild it with the right people than to keep building that tower on the sticks, you know. And there was a time where we had to make a decision, you know, to rebuild some of these things or to keep building on the sticks, you know. And you know, decisions like that are hard because it slows you down big time, you know. But there are also things where you have to do, because if you keep doing it, you're just going to be in a worse position later, you know. Even like not having code documented in some places, and you know, a lot of non-tech founders don't know this stuff. They're just going a million miles an hour, you know. And then all of a sudden, they're like, they're trying to box up something to sell, and there's no documentation, you know. And you're like, right. Yo, they can't bring their own engineers in and just figure it out. You try to sell a box, you know, you can't sell the box because the box is unreadable, you know. And if it breaks somewhere in between there, those million lines of code, how would that guy that doesn't know, he wasn't a part of this, how does he know how to fix it, right?
Right.
You know, they want their own engineers. They don't want Robert, you know, from Ukraine that you have, you know, your buddy. They want to bring their own people in, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, that's just the truth, you know. So they have to document everything. Everything's got to be super easy. You know, think about building, you know, something where somebody can just go in there, sit in the driver's seat, and just press on the pedal and take it over. That's how easy it should be. And, you know, I think you have to, you know, even if it's working, you know, think about like, what if the worst situation happened? You know, what if the worst situation, you can't have a single point of failure. You know, a lot of times in our business, there was a single point of failure. If Robert died, holy fuck, you know, we're in fucking trouble, bro.
Right.
Yeah, Robert doesn't show up, dude. We are hooked. We are so screwed. You know, you can't have that. You can't have Robert getting hit by a bus, bro, and dying on the side of the road. Because then, you know, the whole business goes up in flames. And I think, you know, you need to think about it. You can't have a single point of failure. You got to have, like, your business on the defense. It's got to be defensible. And you know, these are things that I learned sometimes you learn these things a little late. And, but even if you're learning it now, during this conversation, you're hearing this, you're like, fuck, I got a Robert. You know what I mean? His name's Sal, you know, it's a fuck. I got a fucking problem. You know, that is a problem, by the way. It's a real big problem. Right. You need to fix that problem immediately. You know, 'cause if he gets stabbed by his girlfriend tomorrow, oh shit, you know?
Oh damn!
I mean, dude, anything can happen, bro. Like, anything can happen. You know, good old Sal like has a heart attack tomorrow. Like, whoa, like shit. You know, what happens to your business? And that's a real thing. You know, the world is a trip. So you need to make sure that you fix that situation ASAP. You know, and even if your world's built on sticks, which a lot of your guys out there listening to this, you might not want to admit it, but you know, you're built on sticks, and you need to fix that. And that means that you have to go slow to go fast. You have to rebuild some parts, you know, you have to redocument some things. And as much as you don't like to hear that and how much money it's going to cost you to do that, it's actually better to do that than to keep on going in a direction that would actually create more pain later, because it will create more pain later eventually. At some point in the future, is going to.
Yeah.
And that could be the time when you have the big client, you know, you have the big client at that time, not now. You know, ask me how I know.
Because it's based on your experience, huh?
Exactly. No, I mean, that was a rhetorical question. Ask me how I know. It's because it's happened, you know, it's happened.
Yeah.
You know, I've experienced all that stuff.
Right, I understand. Damn, whoa, that's not easy, man. I mean, like having Robert or Sal losing that person, it's gonna hurt a lot, especially if you don't have somebody.
A lot of these startups, you know, you have the one guy that you built it with, you know, and he didn't document nothing. You know what I mean? Because he was like, I'm just trying to build, bro. We're just trying to go for the gold, bro. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I didn't have time to document this shit. You know what I mean? And you're just like, okay. Oh, you okay? You know, that's how real founders do it. Ask me how I know. You know, it's because it's happened. You know what I mean? Like, because you're trying to go for the gold. You're trying to build that thing, you know, trying to make that thing happen. No documentation necessary, you know?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're 2 years into the project and there's no documentation. Why? Like, well, I didn't have time, you know? Now it's too much work. You know, I don't have time to go back and fix all that, you know?
Right.
Because now it's like too much work to do it. And so, you know, that's actually the problem is that, you know, in the beginning, you're trying to get the project done, but that's actually the only time to do it. You got to do it as you go. You know, yeah, it sucks. Yeah, I know. And honestly, it's going to slow us down. Mm-hmm. But if you imagine if you're 2 years into the project and now you got to do it, you know, he's like, dude, I don't have time for this. It's crazy.
Yeah. A lot of work.
And I don't even remember some of this stuff. Like, I didn't remember what I did in there.
Right.
Exactly. You just, some of it's just a guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not good because now that one thing breaks and he's like, yo, I don't know how to fix this, bro.
Yeah.
Now that guy's gone. He put the documentation wrong. And now good old Kelly is trying to fix it. You know, she's like, dude, I don't know what this guy did.
Yeah, it doesn't mean we are from the same industry. We are from we are engineers, means I know everything about what he has done before
because as founders, we don't know which engineers to get. We're like, engineers, they're all the same. Who cares? Just engineer this, bro. Go ahead, do it. You know, fix it, engineer it. Like, oh, okay. Like, you have money? Okay.
Okay, after taking the money.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, man. I have no idea.
Fine. No problem. Yeah.
Like, I have no idea that I need to do this or that.
Yeah, sure, I can do it. Wasn't no problem.
Backtracked, documented. Yeah, it wasn't documented at all.
No idea what they're not a DevOps. They're just like some regular Joe Schmo engineer. You know, they say they're full stack, which no one's full stack. You know, it's like some like half stack. Like Joe Jack is a low jack, is what he is. You know, and you don't know what he is. He's trying to freaking save your car from getting stolen. That's all.
That's why you mentioned earlier. You as a founder, you need to know your stuff, basics at least, or else you'll be fucked by new guy that came
that's
in.
That's how I know. I mean, shit. We had 100 engineers at one point.
Oh,
I didn't know what half of them were. Like, you know, I was like, dude, go faster. More engineers. More people, I have no idea what they do, but you know, let's do it.
Oh damn,
yeah,
that's really fun. And you know, Chase,
who's a cobbler of craziness.
Yeah, man, that's a craziness that you had to go through back then. And I could sense the frustration that you had when you're talking about this.
Oh my god!
The stress,
just like it felt like sometimes like we weren't getting anything done. I was like, I was just running on a treadmill. Sometimes I was like, I told my buddy, I said, does it feel like we're running on a treadmill, dude? Like I feel like I'm on a treadmill. Like I'd get off a call and I'd just be like, dude, that shit was the most frustrating shit. Like we'd have calls just to have calls, and I'd just be counting the dollars that we're spending on those calls, like. This I'm playing this guy like blah blah this guy blah blah, and then we'd have another call and to go over the same shit, and it's like, dog, like
damn,
oh my god.
Oh wow.
I mean, I'm not the first founder to go through this, trust me.
Of course. I'm pretty sure, like, you know,
I'm probably one of the first founders to share the story. Like, legitimately, but there's probably a lot of people out there that will relate to this. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So true. Yeah.
Like, I imagine Bill Gates, Elon.
It is the thing, you know? You know, when you don't know, you hire expensive consultants to come in and fix it. And they, you know, you're learning as you go, you know, but you're paying through the nose to do that, you know? I think when we had these consultants come in, I learned a tremendous amount, you know, but it was almost like, you know, you're too late, you know, it was just expensive, you know, and we just wanted to get out at that time, you know, the business. So, right. I mean, we did.
Yeah.
A lot of that was unnecessary, you know. Had I just done my own work and really, like, really understood, you know.
Right. Rough lesson. So for those who are tuning in, you guys, be it you are new founders or not, take Chase's example, his story, and ensure that you don't fuck yourself up. And of course, you know, to the main focus of our interview, Chase, can you share some examples of how generosity has actually led to significant success or triumphs in your experience?
Oh, we're going from that conversation, generosity?
Yeah, because we were talking about donation and all, right?
I mean, you know, I think I've always been a generous person. I've never been stingy ever. And I think that's just been a characteristic of who I am. But I feel like, you know, always understanding where your money's going does really allow you to be more generous. And that's part of the reason why we, you know, built this platform, is so that way, you know, DAF donors and big end of the year donors can make a huge contribution and, you know, allocate it to wherever they want to go. Right. I think, you know, being generous is, it pays back in dividends, and, you know, you never know when it's going to happen. You really don't. And it's, a lot of the times it's unexpected. And, you know, I got a call yesterday, from a client who was looking to do a big nonprofit, and I ended up putting him on a corporation and doing all this stuff. He ended up being a billionaire and then doing a huge investment into our company. And so, like, that was unexpected. And it was one of those things that just happened, but by me helping him do what he needed, you know, it obviously helped us get what we needed. And I think, you know, a lot of times I try to do deals like that. You know, I try to do deals where we're actually giving the people what they need times two, and set us up where, you know, we're earning some sort of dividend based upon whatever we're giving them. And how do we strategically do deals where we're helping someone in a big way, and we're setting us up to get helped as well. And I think that's really how we try to do deals. Three specifically don't come to mind, but that deal certainly comes to mind. We did that yesterday, and it's not necessarily like we gave and then we got back, but we certainly did him a huge favor and paid big dividends for us. So
I believe in this anecdote as well, where they say the more you give, the more you shall receive, in a sense. So the universe or God, or whatever we believe in, will actually give you back twofold, multiple folds in the long run. Doesn't mean it's instant gratification, but it can be a delayed gratification from there as well. Right. And based on yours, it's like, whoa, it's two times.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah. No, I mean, more than that. I mean,
more than it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. And how do you see technology playing role in revolutionizing the charitable giving?
So I feel like what we built is the first step into that process. I feel like that's going to be the way that people give. Transparency is the way. People want to understand. People want to know, you know, and we're the first company that's broken through to do that. And I feel like that's going to revolutionize the way that people give. And, you know, we're just the first company to break through and do it. But, you know, just like in any big company that comes through and does something, in a space where, you know, like in 2010, GoFundMe was revolutionary. I was like, oh my God.
Oh yeah.
You know? But they have the same problems that they did back in 2010 that they have today. I mean, and I think we cure all the problems that GoFundMe has. We make it tax deductible, we make it rewarding, we make it transparent. You know, we remove the capability for, you know, these wishers to, or, you know, recipients to misuse the funds. And I think funds continually get misused on platform like that. You know, it goes to a bank account, you lose the insight into what happens with that money. So that's why there's Netflix specials about, you know, people misusing money. And I mean, actually, like, no good deed. Like, that was a Netflix special about GoFundMe. And there's tons more, you know, it's countless. And it's not, there's no way for them to stop it. So I think we fix those problems, and we change it in a way that we're not changing user behavior. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that when you change when you try to change user behavior, when you bring a new innovative product to the market, that's when you don't get traction. But when you're actually changing the way that people are doing things, and you're changing the unique model of and we'll say charitable giving, but you're not changing user behavior. You're getting cards on your phone. They can go spend it at the store. The same stores that they shop at today, for the goods that they're asking for, you know, I think that makes it easily usable. And people are like, well, why wouldn't I use this? You know, it's so easy, you know? And so you make it easy, you make it in a way that you don't change your behavior. I think that's when you have a real winner. You have an opportunity to really break through the market, and we're excited to do that. Yeah,
I agree, man. I mean, like, you know, when I saw the website of Wishes Inc., I was like, oh wow, this is very unique. I mean, like, it's simple, easy to use, and I saw like, oh, you have one side of things is for the wishes, one side of things is for the recipients, and then what you can actually get from there, what you can actually do. It's pretty simple, step-by-step process is very user-friendly as well. I felt that, whoa, this is amazing. But one thing is, many listeners would be thinking about, hey man, donation, man, I think it's not, you know, it's not transparent and whatsoever not. And there are many other things that they could be thinking of. So can you share with us, like, what are some common misconceptions people have about charitable donations, and how can we address them?
Well, I mean, misconceptions are that they're being misused, that, you know, that donations are being mishandled. I think that... there's a lot of good charities out there, and, you know, we're just trying to showcase the charities and make them available for people to use in a way that they don't, they're making it quick and easy, and they're able to use the money right away. I think, you know, today, if you use a platform like GoFundMe, it takes 10 days to get the dollars. If you use a platform like Facebook, it takes 3 quarters to get that money. If you use a platform like Instagram, it takes 45 days. Through our platform, you get the money in 24 hours, and it's usable right away. And so I think there's a big huge difference between what we're doing and what is available in the market.
Okay. And would you say that, like, would you say that when people were to make a donation via, say, GoFundMe or Make a Wish or whichever charity or foundation that they have gone to, would you say that the funds being misused is actually at a lower percentage?
No.
No.
I think, you know, I mean, who knows? Nobody knows what happens to the money after it's given on the platform like that. Nobody actually knows. Right. Nobody actually knows. But how do you know, actually? You don't. You have no idea. Right. It goes to a bank account at some point. You have zero idea what happens to the money.
Okay. And then how does Wishes Inc. aim to make charitable donations transparent, tax deductible, and rewarding for donors?
We have a 501c3c, so all the donations go through the 501c. So you instantly get a tax donation, and then you know you're giving to specific categories like advertising, airfare, hotel, groceries, rideshare. The list goes on and on. So you actually get instant tax rewards on cashback instantly on your own credit card. If you're an ambassador on the platform, you get an extra 1% on anything that you donate to. And then we actually turn that donation into a virtual MasterCard, and that's spent at whatever is going. And since we're the card issuer, we can see all the transactions in real time. And we give that reporting back to you guys in real time. They can only spend in whatever it is category that they've asked for. So is it possible to spend in a different category? And we actually always know what they're spending on instantaneously. So we report that back. So that's how we do it. We're a card issuer.
Right. Okay. So why is it that, you know, using technology can help create transparency in the charitable giving space?
We turn donations into a virtual credit cards, and then those cards are spent in the market. We actually can see every transaction that happens. That's how we create transparency.
Okay, nice.
When you spend money at the supermarket with your credit card, do you see what you bought?
Yes.
Exactly. We are the MasterCard.
Right.
We are that card. So what that money is actually pushed onto our cards. And then when that money is spent, we actually see every penny that's spent. And then we report that back to the donor.
Okay. Well, this is a really cool feat, man. I mean, I've not heard of this feature.
It doesn't exist in the market.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, we are the first.
Yes. So for those of you who are tuning in, if you want to make a donation, for those of you who want to make a donation, can actually go through Wishes Inc. to make a donation, and they are
like
gonna...
I just got you to finally understand what we're doing there. I was like, listen, we're the card issuer, bro. We actually turn that money into a virtual credit card. So when that card is spent anywhere, at the grocery store, at the gas station, at the rideshare, wherever it is spent, we actually see every single transaction that happens. And then we report that back to the donor. So just like when you go spend money at the grocery store, or you go spend money at Target, or you go spend money at Safeway, and you see exactly what you spent on the text message on your phone, because it just texted you, hey, you spent $16 at Safeway. You know, that's us giving that message back to you, saying, hey, that wisher just spent $16.
Nice. Wow. Hey, this is a really nice, very cool feature, I would say. And this is really, I would say, a really amazing tech. I believe many donors will be excited to look at, oh, wow, that my money was given to this person or this organization, and then it goes to this boy who's maybe from Maui or from Palestine or whatever, and then we are helping this guy, and they are giving them food, they are doing this, they are doing that. It's like this is much better.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, right, I agree. And just want to ask you, right, how does having transparency help build trust between the donors and the nonprofits?
I mean, it's a pretty easy question to ask, but you know, ultimately we help them raise money. So our goal with the nonprofits is, if you're a new nonprofit, try to go raise money today. No one trusts you. No one knows who you are. They ain't going to give you money. I mean, they're only giving money to the guys that have been around forever. So in those guys, they barely trust, you know. So if you're a new nonprofit, you know, trying to raise money, if you look at like the model, like Charity Water, the reason why people give them money is because they show every single dime that they're spending on the Charity Water. They say, hey, we're all this money's going to water. If you don't know us, give to the mission. If you know us, give to what we're doing over here and at the mission. And I think what we're really trying to do is build a model where every nonprofit can do that. Say, hey, listen, if you're a real business, if you're a real nonprofit, you have people, you have an office, you have things that you're paying for. So the reality is you have admin costs, you know, but every donor wants to understand what goes to admin and what goes to impact. So what we're trying to do is make an environment where every nonprofit can come out and say, hey, this is what's going to admin here. If you know us, give us the admin. And if you don't know us, just give to the mission. And every donor wants to understand what goes to admin, what goes to impact. So we're solving both problems.
Yeah.
That's it. You're on mute. You know, at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is just create that trust with the donor, because it doesn't exist today. It really doesn't. And I think by the nonprofit being able to show what they're doing with the money, it allows the donors to have that trust and allows them to want to give to charities they don't know. And the charities that they do know, it allows them to give more, because our thesis is if they know what happens with the money, then they'll give more and more often. That's our goal.
Right. Okay. Got it. And what advice would you give to individuals or businesses that are looking to make a meaningful impact through charitable giving?
I mean, if you're looking to make a meaningful impact, then, you know, have them work with wishes, because at the end of the day, yes, like, you can't actually, you know, we're giving the nonprofit the ability to show them what are they really doing? How are they really spending their money? Are they really, we want to help nonprofits work their mission. You know, the reality is nonprofits are built because somebody had the idea, like, I want to support this. I want to grow this mission. I want to help these people or this thing, this cause. You know, nonprofits are there to make a difference. And, you know, the real nonprofits out there are doing the good work, and we want to help them. So, you know, and they're not, and those good nonprofits aren't afraid to show what they're doing, because that's what they're doing. They're out there doing the work. You know, if they're out there doing the work, they're trying to make a difference, we should be supporting them. And, you know, wishes allows those good nonprofits, they don't have anything to be afraid of. You know, they, mm-hmm. you know, the ones that aren't, you know, they probably won't want to do this. You know, I don't right. blame them. Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Exposure.
Okay. And just want to ask you, right, in your opinion, Chase, what are the key factors that contribute to the success of charitable initiatives?
Charitable what?
Initiative.
Oh, well, I mean, it's got to be some sort of cause that people want to get behind, you know?
Right. The story, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a business, you know, and you want to support something, you want to kind of align your business with a cause, and I think that's a good motive to have. It's got to be aligned with that, you know? You can't just pick an off the wall thing that doesn't make sense. At the end of the day, it's got to align with whatever you're doing, and people will support it. And you really got to be, there's work involved. You can't just have a nonprofit, or you can't have a cause that you want to do and not really be involved. I mean, the reality is you have to be involved to some extent in order for it to be successful. Otherwise, it's just an idea. And ideas don't go anywhere without work.
Yeah, you got to do the work. You got to go to the place, for example, to show the behind the scenes what you're doing and the story behind this Maui kids or this people that are having some issues and how you are going to help them and how you want to raise awareness for helping these people out, or else I believe, you know, people wouldn't want to make a donation,
right?
In a sense.
Exactly.
Right. And then, you know, how do you think that the recent years, especially pandemic, has actually COVID affected so many businesses and all? How has this thing, the pandemic, changed the landscape of charitable donations, and what lessons have we learned from this?
I mean, I've grown remote teams. I've done everything remote. So my life's always remote. Didn't change anything for me.
Right.
This is my life. It's been my life before and after. So I don't really see it change much for me. It's been the same.
Okay. Because you guys have been doing remote.
I built my whole entire team remote. Everything was all in different countries this whole entire time. I think I was remote before remote was a remote, you know?
Right.
So it didn't change one bit for me.
Okay. And then what are your thoughts on the future of philanthropy and how it will continue to evolve?
I mean, it represents almost $3 trillion of the US GDP today. It's just going to continue to grow. I mean, it's an industry that will always be around. So if you want to get involved in industries that always will have a meaningful impact, like forever, like, you know, there's industries that won't ever go away, like entertainment, like things like that. They don't go away.
Right.
Philanthropy is never going to go away. It will always be a thing. And so it's going to grow and going to keep going, and it's going to get more transparent. And I think what we're doing is going to change the landscape of how some of these companies exist. And, you know, by the time it's 2025, it'll probably be like $5 trillion a year.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, like what you said before, I actually read an article or heard from a podcast. I think it's one of them. So you actually said you can build businesses that make you financially successful, but also you can make a huge impact on the world around you in a way, right?
No, I mean, that's what I'm trying to do, you know?
Yep. And yeah. Man, this is awesome. And just looking ahead, what are your goals and plans for the future of Wishes Inc?
I mean, our vision is to help 1 billion people. And so, you know, there's just a lot of people around the world that can't get help that they need. And big corporations like Red Cross, they're massive and they're good corporations, but they're not able to really fill the need of the guy with 3 daughters or the wife, or the girl with, you know, 2, because everyone gets the same thing at a crisis, you know, but everyone needs different needs. And so I think this really fills that gap and allows people to help people in real time. And it's going to really hurt companies like GoFundMe because they're not built to do this. And so, which is a good thing for us because, you know, the market's wide open and I think we're the first, and being the first in this situation, it matters.
I agree. When you're first, you're able to experiment, you are able to know what to do when things goes wrong and what are the processes that you need for clients and etc. in a way.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I understand. And you know, Chase, as we are coming to the end of the podcast, I have one last question for you. Okay, imagine this. You suddenly lose everything, okay? Your money, your assets, even your reputation. Okay, so what will you do from day 1 to day 30 to save yourself?
Yeah, well, I mean, that happened to me. So, I mean, right. Yeah, at the end of the day, like, I've already gone through that. So, you know, what happens is you sit in bed for 3 months and you're depressed and you wonder how the fuck you're going to get out of it. And then what you do after that, because everyone's like, well, I just like do it all. It's like, nah, bullshit. Like, when all that shit happens, like, there's a real fucking life problem that happens, man. It's a life issue, right. You know? And it's hard to like come to terms with losing all that. And, you know, and all of a sudden you build this company and it's no longer there. Like, that's hard to deal with. So, but what I did was, like, you know, I said, you know, I told myself, I said, you're Chase Harmer, dog. You're Chase Harmer. You got to make this shit happen. Like, you know, and I think you can either cry about it or just go out there and do something about it. And so, that's what I did. And, you know, it's a hard road, but if you've done it once, you can do it three times, four times, you know. It's just really all a mental game, you know. The end of the day, it's all mental, you know. It's all in your mind. So, you know, you can do it, but it's a hard road. And I'm not going to tell my secrets of success exactly, but what I can say is that, you know, it's not easy. And the first like few months, you might just be stuck in bed wondering, like, how did it all happen? And but one day you're going to go, dude, like, why am I in bed? Like, you need to figure this out, you know, and you need to get up and get out of bed, you know, take your whatever pills you need to take to get out of there, because it's hard to get out of that bed. But you got to make that first move and do it. So, I mean, I've been in that exact position, so I can say it's possible. Mm-hmm. And but step one is get out of bed and realize that you've done it once, you could do it twice, you know, and start moving forward, taking one step after another, and realize, you know, that you're human, and you're not the super person that you thought you were, you know. Might have been king of shit mountain one time, but you were king of shit mountain. Just realize that you weren't, like, you know, the egos get the best of us, but
you know, right,
it's not the rest of us. So
so you would say that, you know, like, the first thing that you do is to have a mental game with yourself, saying that, hey, you know, I've done it once before, I'm going to do it again. And of course, now I'm going to do it better. And by doing better, meaning,
yeah, to say, you learn lessons. I mean, what happened before? Like, just remember, like, those are massive lessons that you learn. All the shit that you learned before, maybe not what happened to get you there, right? But all the stuff that, like, happened before, like, you learned a lot of things. So, like,
right,
what can you utilize to do this, to do it this time, do it this time again, but do it better? You know, now you know what to do. You know how to build a big company, you know how to get the right engineers, you know how to do all these things. So, like, you know, no matter what got you laying in your bed, it's all those things that you learned before. Those aren't a waste, you know, you can do it,
mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what you got to remember. Don't focus on what happened to get you in bed. Focus on the things that you learned before that, because those are things that no one else knows in this world. There's not a lot of people that know that shit, you know? And that's really what I remembered, is like, yo, like, I can build this, I can do this, you know? If you have an idea, execute, yeah? Figure out how to get the money, do it again, you know? It's not simple, it's not easy, but you can do it.
Yep. If Chase can do it, so can you. it just sounds like you know, if Yen can cook, so can you. The old TV show. Yeah, but anyway, well, thanks a lot for, you know, for coming on board to the podcast to share so many value bombs with us. And I learned a lot, and I'm gonna make full use of what you have learned, what you have taught and what you have learned along the way as well for my own business and etc. And of course, just want to ask, like, where can my audience find you on social media? Yeah,
you can get me at Chase Harmer on LinkedIn, or you can get me, you can actually get on the wait list at Wishes if you're a wisher, or if you're a donor, or if you're a nonprofit, you can get all registered there. And we're launching very soon, so next couple weeks, and we'll be good. So,
all right. Appreciate you. All right.
Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you so much. And for those of you who tuning in, just want to say thank you so much for your continuous support to make the Legacy Show one of the best podcasts in the entire world. And of course, Chase, thank you once again for being with us. And with that, stay tuned for the next episode of the Legacy Show, where we're going to have a lot of ton of amazing guests that are going to drop a lot of golden nuggets for you guys. All right. So that, see you and take care and have a great day ahead. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of The Legacy Show. I hope it has enlightened you. I hope it has brought you to an epiphany where you realize that this is where you want to go and this is what you want to do. So I hope you will continue to support and also at the same time like, comment and share this episode out to your people, to your family, your friends. And not forgetting that we have just created a Telegram group. It's called the Legacy Show Family. So you can go and check it out and let us know how you find this group is serving you. All right. So with that, I would like to thank you once again. See you and stay tuned for another episode of the Legacy Show.